Hi, it's Mackenzie, and this is the Mill Spouse Brief. Happy Friday. I hope you guys are having a wonderful week. We have been busy over here at the Culver House. Last week, my cousin came into town, which was so much fun. And so we went down to San Diego, and we did like the tour of the U.S. Midway, which was so cool. I literally tell everybody that they should go to that because after now going to it, it's amazing. And there's a movie about the Midway you can check out. And then I think just because now I have like some bias because I want to get into the Navy, seeing it and getting to talk to people about kind of their experience. A lot of people that worked on the Midway now volunteer there at the museum. And so overall, it was just really cool. So if you're ever in San Diego, I totally recommend going and seeing it. It's a whole kind of like day excursion, probably like maybe half a day, because there's just so much to see and read and learn about. And I don't know, it was really fun. We checked out La Jolla, which is where Kate and I got engaged, and then we had a beach day on Thursdays here in Oceanside. They do like a farmer's market, so we went to that, and we saw the pier and kind of walked around there, and then they have like a sunset market in the evening, so kind of some of the same vendors from the farmer's market, but then also a lot more vendors, a lot more like food trucks and things like that, and it's like four or five streets for the farmer's market. Or for the sunset market compared to the farmer's market, it's pretty much just like one long street. So we went and checked out that, and that was really fun, and kind of just hung out and had fun just catching up. We did our book club, all that kind of fun stuff. And then I also had to work a bunch and the last few weeks getting ready for elections and setting everybody up around the country so that they can print their ballots for November election. So that was good, and then Cade was in the field for like 8-9 days, and so it was pretty quiet around here. You know, it's really different, like when he's gone, like how different things are. I feel like we have a lot more of a routine when he's here just because of work versus when he's not here. I'm like, oh, I eat whenever, I do these things whenever, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just funny seeing the contrast of like our lives depending on when he's home or when he's not home. Overall, it was really fun. I'm glad he's back. And this week, we've just had a lot of like catching up to do and errands to run and, you know, different things like that. I wonder for any of the listeners, if you guys have Costco memberships, how much do you spend at Costco every time you go and like how often do you go? Because I feel like I can never not spend so much money there. And granted, like everything we buy, we use, like nothing goes to waste. And I get you're buying it in bulk. But overall, like still, I just feel like no matter what, I'm dropping like $200 every time I go, which I don't know. Tell me if that's normal or if it's not. I want to know. So I have been kind of struggling figuring out what direction I want to go with the podcast and what I want to do. So I won't give out all the details yet, but we have this episode and then we have one more episode next week and then that will end season one. So season two will start the 8th of October, which happens to be my birthday. So that's one of the hints I'll give you for what season two will be about. And I'm really, really excited. Shout out to my girl Emily. She kind of let me vent and talk to her and kind of pick her brain and try to figure out what area I want to go and like what direction I want to take the podcast. So I'm really excited for season two. I had a really big brainstorming session yesterday and kind of got everything lined up and in order. So hopefully you guys will stick around and check out season two and let me know what you guys think. And this episode is with Marty. And you guys, Marty is literally the best. It was so much fun recording this episode with her. She'll obviously explain in detail kind of who she is and what she's about. But a little backstory, she's my grandparents' neighbor. My grandparents right now have a house in Holly Springs, North Carolina. And so that's where they live. And they live right across the street. So Kate and I met her when we went to North Carolina after our wedding in July. And it was really fun talking to her. And then I was like, yeah, I would love to have you on the podcast. And so we recorded the episode about like a month and a half ago. And it's so informational, you guys. She was an active duty service member. And then she was a military spouse. And now her husband just got out. And so she talks all about their life and all the different places that they lived and what it was like raising kids while active duty, then raising kids as a military spouse, having her husband have like unaccompanied orders and them living across the country from each other. So she has so much good insight and a lot of just knowledge and truly like just so smart when it comes to like how to like best succeed in the military. I felt like I gained so much information that I can apply to my life and to Cade's life and our life together. And so I'm just really grateful that she took the time to get on there. She is a seasoned military spouse, and I am so grateful that we have them on the podcast because obviously I'm brand new to being a military spouse, and so I know very little compared to seasoned military spouses. And so she really does give a lot of information, and I feel like can help military spouses whenever they struggle. So check out this episode with Marty. I really love it, and it's a bit long, but it's so worth it. So just hold on and listen to the whole thing because there's so much good stuff in it. And without further ado, here's Marty. All right, so I'm here with Marty. Do you want to introduce yourself, Marty?
Hi, I'm Marty Orton. I currently live outside of Raleigh, North Carolina with my family. My husband just retired from active duty Air Force. I was in the Air Force previous to becoming a military spouse. So I spent about 15 years in the Air Force. And then I have spent 20 years. I have spent over 20 years as a military spouse.
Oh my gosh. How long did your husband serve before you retired?
So he was in a little over 25 years.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. He was in a little over 25 years, and we have been married about 23 years. Yeah. About 23 years. And so I was only active duty for about, I guess, maybe 2 years of our marriage, because I got out 2 or 3 years after we got married because I wanted to, I'd had one child already as an active duty member. And, you know, we were talking about having more children, and I did not want to, for me, a lot of people make it work, you know, both spouses active duty and having children. And like with we were both in the same career field, and our particular career field required, you know, a lot of deployments.
Yeah. What was your guys' MOS?
So we were what's called air battle managers within the Air Force. So we were both flight crew at different points. I was primarily a flight crew member. My husband had done both ground crew and flight crew. And, you know, as you move along the chain and get more responsibility, you end up doing more management type things, but still in operations and being in operations, it's just very demanding. And like I said, some people make it work with both members being active duty, but it's very difficult. The military is demanding, period, whether you're both in or one person's in and the other person is a civilian. It doesn't matter. It's a demanding lifestyle. For us, our choice was that if we were going to have more children, I did not want to be active duty anymore because essentially I felt like I was doing both jobs terrible.
So. Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of responsibility. That's a lot to do. Okay, so backtrack. You said that you were active duty when you had your first kid. What was that like for you? You know, like being pregnant while in the military, going through giving birth while in the military, like that kind of thing. What was your experience?
Actually, being pregnant in the military did not, in and of itself, didn't bother me. I got frustrated at a couple points because at that point I was flying, but I was very strong-willed about how I wanted things to go. So The flight surgeon I had that was responsible for me would have said I was a royal pain in the butt. I just was very determined to do it my way. So theoretically, you cannot fly your first trimester. And I somehow did not go to the flight surgeon until almost the end of my first trimester. So I was pretty much there. And then my second trimester, I was able to fly and still continue my regular duties. So I pretty much did that the first 6 months. My biggest frustration, and I actually got pretty angry about it, was I was in instructor upgrade for my field. So I was becoming an instructor for my position, which, you know, at that point, when you're first in, is a big deal. You know, you know you're capable enough to teach it to other people. And I was the youngest one that had been picked for that. So I was like, yeah, you know, I was excited. And I was proud that I was successful and had gotten picked for it. And they stopped my upgrade, even though I had finished most of it, because I was pregnant. And at at the end of 6 months, I would not be able to fly. So at the 6 month point, at the end of my second trimester, I could no longer do flying duties. And my point was, I have time to finish the flying portion of my upgrade. And their point was, well, we can't use you as an instructor when you finish because you're going to be grounded. And I was like, but you can't get somebody else upgraded in that time period. Like even with my maternity leave, I'll still be ready to go before another person would. But I lost that argument. And for me, that was a real sore point because it wasn't logical. And to me, decisions should be logic based, not you're pregnant, we're going to yank you. And so I did get to finish it after I delivered, and after I completed my maternity leave, I was able to finish my upgrade. But it did definitely sour it for me. But I, being pregnant in and of itself wasn't an issue because I worked right up until the end. When I went on ground duty, I just made sure I lined up things. I had been selected to go to an advanced school that didn't require flying. It was all groundwork. I'd been selected for a ground school. And so I was able to talk him into letting me go to a different class. So as soon as I was grounded, during my third trimester, I went to my advanced course.
And how much time do they give you off after you have the baby as active duty? Is it still 12 weeks or is it different?
No, when I gave birth, it was a month because it was a vaginal birth. If you get a C-section, you got 6 weeks. If it was a vaginal birth, you got 1 month. So I went back to work after 1 month, and that was hard. So
wow. Is that still the case now?
I know they have changed. I don't know about the initial maternity leave, but they have changed. I know that they have changed the rules in different ways, and they're looking at, and I think they've already implemented it. It would be, if somebody wanted to do this, it's worth looking up because
It's 12 weeks. Right now they get 12 weeks.
Okay.
So it's up to 6 weeks of maternity leave with an additional 6 weeks of primary leave tacked on. And then secondary caregivers currently get 2 weeks.
Yeah, I knew they had changed some aspects of it, and they were allowing secondary caregivers to have leave now too, which is great.
I mean, I can't even imagine only having a month and then back to work. I mean, I feel like your body's not even completely like healed from that. Even if it was a vaginal birth versus C-section, they're both very taxing on your body.
Yes, I think so I was young then. That wasn't as bad as I could not do that now. But first of all, the sleep deprivation was literally the hardest part.
Yeah.
Just going back to work at that point was very hard. And other countries, like at that time, I had worked with some Australians, and I was very envious of the fact that the Australian service allowed you to take a break in service. And I think our Department of Defense has looked at this and may have implemented certain aspects of it, because you can take a break in service and come back in right where you were at before. And the Australians, I think at that time allowed up to 2 years. It may have just been one, but I think
that's interesting.
I thought it was fantastic, because I loved my job. I really did love being in the Air Force. I loved my job. But it was just very hard for me to go back and be as immersed in it as I had been, and be a mom. I felt like I was just not doing either one as well as I wanted to.
And was your husband also in the military at this time?
No, my first husband was a civilian.
Okay, so he was a civilian, and then your now husband is in the military, or just retired from the military. Okay, so was it hard for your first husband having you have to go back to work so soon with the baby? Like, how was that adjustment for you guys?
You know what? That is a really good question. I think the hardest thing for him was he was just not cut out to be responsible for, you know, our kid, and that really what he just wasn't cut out for that. I have known, like, good friends of ours, they were both active duty, and he was able to retire when their kids were young, and she was junior to him, and she's still active
duty. Oh, that's so cool.
He retired, and he is a fantastic stay-at-home parent. So
do you think it just really depends on the person?
I really think it does depend on the person. I've known more than one person that, you know, the non-traditional, you know, role of the man staying home, and that have done well. And so I think it's totally dependent on the person and the couple, you know, however your family is structured. I think it's really depends on that couple and that family, you know, what works for them, what is best for them. So when I had remarried and both of us were active duty, and we talked about having kids, you know, I was very torn, but I really just didn't think the best. So we discussed it, you know, multiple times, both before we got married and after we got married, and the best thing for us and for me, if I was going to have more kids, was to be able to be at home and provide the much needed stability that you need in that lifestyle.
Oh, 100%. And I definitely think it's hard, because when you have both parents in active duty, you don't have the one that's home, because you guys can both be on deployment schedules. You guys both have workups and field ops and things like that. And so I can only imagine how hard it is for dual military with children, because you don't have that parent that is home holding and having, like, adding that stability. So that's really interesting. Okay, so explain what you and your husband's jobs are. So, like, you talked about your MOS a little bit, but what did your, like, day-to-day looked like? What were your responsibilities, you know, things like that?
It really genuinely fluctuated depending on the job that we had. So when I was air crew, the air battle manager job is at the entry level, is you sit in front of a computerized radar scope, and you're getting a lot of different information in through the radar and the computer and the data links that give you data from other platforms and a bunch of different radios. And so you're getting all this information in, and you're looking at your screen and you're listening to your radios, and you have to interpret, in our case, what's happening in the air war. So you're looking for, depending on your area of responsibility, you may be responsible for our fighters, and you have to be able to tell the fighters where the air-to-air fighters, okay, this is where all the bad guys are, this is what the bad guys are doing, this is where the friendlies are. So if in an air war, you know, on so you train for the quote-unquote typical air war, and you know, nothing is ever typical, but yeah. But you would, like, let's say we're going to go bomb this place to support the army and drive back, you know, the bad guys. And so you'd have the bombers, you'd have tankers to refuel things, you'd have the air-to-air fighters to make sure that the bombers were protected. And so you have to be able to look at all that's going on and tell whoever you're responsible for the information they need to carry out their mission, whether it's to kill all the bad guys that are protecting the area, or, you know, bomb the target or refuel the other planes. And so it's like orchestra, it's like being a conductor in an orchestra, where you're trying to bring all the different pieces together into an effective mission. And I loved it because it was very fast paced, and you had to think in your feet, and you had to problem solve. And yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. But I also did things like I taught at the I got to do an assignment at the Air Force Academy and teach English at the prep school.
Wow.
There at the Air Force Academy. So that was a great job, and I liked that a lot. And I also got to I went to an assignment where I taught at the school for my career field. So I was also able to do some other jobs. So, you know, when I was in operations, I could have a showtime any time of day. I could have it in the middle of the night. I could have it in early hours in the morning. I could have it in the middle of the day. And then you go fly a mission. You have to brief. You have to execute the mission. You have to come back and debrief. So, you know, that's about a 14-hour day, depending on the length of the mission. Or I would have to deploy and not be around. Or maybe I just had to go in more of a 9-to-5 kind of thing, except it was like 7:30 to 4:30. Yeah. And then when I was teaching at the Air Force Academy, it was more of a, you know, I was there, same kind of thing, 7:30 to 4:35. So it just depended on the job, what my hours were, and whether or not I was traveling and how much I was gone and that type of thing.
Wow, that's so cool. Okay, so tell me where you all lived and like were stationed, and you can kind of do like when you were in and then when you guys like moved as a family because of your husband's orders.
So I grew up in Virginia. I left Virginia and I went to officer training school because I went to college at Virginia Tech. I did not do ROTC. So I applied, like you're applying to OCS. I applied to OCS. I got accepted.
Oh my gosh.
Where is
the Air Force OCS?
It is now in Alabama, Montgomery, Alabama. But at the time that I went through, it was in Texas. So it was in San Antonio, Texas. So I went from Virginia to Texas. And then when it finished.
Real quick, what was OCS like? Just like a small little.
It was interesting. You know, I had never been, you know, all my friends gave me a hard time because I'm very strong-willed, apparently. And so when I said I was going off to join, the, I was applying to go to the Air Force, their comment was, you know, people tell you what to do.
When that is exactly Papa's answer to me. So for listeners, Marty is my grandparents' neighbor, and that's how we got connected. And when I called to tell Mama and Papa, LaFrank and Linda, my, like, what I was doing, first of all, Bama, Linda, she said, wow, probably like 27,000 times. Like, she couldn't even like come up with words besides wow. She was so shocked. And then my grandpa comes into like the camera because I FaceTimed them to tell them this.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, people are going to tell you what to do and you're not going to like that.
That is the same reaction I got. There's going to be a lot of people telling you what to do and I don't know how you're going to handle it. And I will say, as a lieutenant, I did get in trouble a couple of times because I was like, why are we doing it that way? But that's stupid.
I think that's my biggest thing. I'm going to be like, well, that's like you said earlier, like, I need the logical answer. So like, if that's not logical to me, I'm not going to like that.
Exactly. That's exactly right. But I have always done best when I am challenged. And that is one of the reasons I wanted to go into the military, because I wanted to be challenged. I did not want to be doing the same thing every day. You know,
Marty, I think that we're like soul sisters. I feel like this is me talking.
So, you know, going to officer training school, I'd never been through anything like that before, but, you know, I grew up doing sports and so, you know, it's that same kind of thing where you're instead of being coached, you know, and I had some pretty hard coaches, you know, it's same kind of thing where they're like, this is what you have to do. And they give you like an impossible amount of time to do it in and yell at you if you're doing it wrong. And I'm like, no one's going to tell me I can't get that done. So I actually did very well at OTS, far better than I ever thought I would, because I grew up very introverted and I still am, in the sense that, you know, I need some alone time every day.
Yeah.
But I was very shy. So when I got to OTS, my flight commander, you know, the actual staff officer who was in charge of my flight, told me in one of our feedback sessions, he was like, you know, at some point you're going to have to start talking to people before noon. And I was like,
oh, I love that. That's so funny.
I have anything to say before I'm really awake. So,
okay. So you went to San Antonio for OCS, and then where did you go after that?
So I went from there to my initial training was in Florida, and I had to spend 6 months in Florida. And then I went from Florida to, and that was in the Panama City area. So I was at Tyndall Air Force Base in Panama City. And then I went from there to Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma for more training. And that was specifically for air crew training. Like, I learned how to do the job in Florida on the ground, like the basics of the job. And then I had to go to Oklahoma to learn how to do the same job on a different platform in the air. So I spent 6 months in Oklahoma. And then my first assignment was in Anchorage, Alaska at Emmendorf Air Force Base. That's now, it's a joint base now.
What is it like living in Alaska?
I really liked it. I did. I kind of cheated though, because I knew a lot of, like, some of the spouses I was friends with did not like it because they were there all the time, except when they got the opportunity to travel. But because of my job, I was gone at least half the year. So, you know, their big complaint was the winters are long. And I was like spending some of that time in Central and South America, Hawaii, or the Philippines.
So you didn't have to live in like a forever winter.
Yeah. So I loved it, but I wasn't there year round, but it is gorgeous. And, the biggest thing about being in Alaska was all my family was in the East Coast. And so trying to get from Alaska to the East Coast was at least a 24-hour kind of.
Oh my gosh.
You flew from, because of the time difference, and you flew from, you had to fly from Alaska to Washington State. And then there was usually another connection somewhere. So yeah, that was, the biggest challenge, so to speak, but it was a great assignment. I loved it. I got to do a wide variety of things. I traveled around the Pacific area because our area of responsibility was the Pacific. So I did a lot of stuff and saw a lot of things in the Pacific and then also Central and South America. So it was a great assignment. I really loved it.
Wow. Okay, so after Alaska, where did you go?
That's when I went to Colorado, and I was in Colorado Springs teaching at the prep school right there on the Air Force Academy. And that was another great job. I cannot complain about any of the jobs I had. And I did that for 3.5 years, I think. Yeah, 3.5 years. And I loved it. I found out, and that was one thing about being in the military. I did get to do a lot of things. I found out I was good at things I never would have guessed I was good at. I would have never guessed I would ever enjoy teaching, because I can be very impatient. And I just absolutely loved teaching. I loved that job. And I really enjoyed helping the prep school students. And we got to do both, you know, the academics, and I got to work with them in the swimming program, and we had to help with their military training because it was a small group. So I got to do a little bit of everything. That was a really great job.
That's cool. That was something Kate and I were talking about the other day, and this is kind of on like a broader spectrum, but I feel like when I was a civilian, and I still am a civilian, but like now being kind of entrenched in the military life because I'm married to a Marine, I thought that like as when I was fully a civilian and had no idea about military, I didn't realize that in the military, every job is covered by somebody in the military, you know? So like on like the broad spectrum, like on Camp Pendleton, the mailroom is full of Marines doing the post office job. And all the grounds, it's a working party of junior Marines going, hey, there's some weeds that need pulled. You better get out there with your orange vest. And all of a sudden, yeah, you have somebody doing this and you have somebody doing that. And I felt like as a civilian, you didn't realize that any job that needs taking care of, whether it's at teaching or doing this or doing that, it's just it's a military service member covering that position, doing that B-billet, you know? And so it's things like that where you're like, wow. And like you said, you get so many different opportunities and you have so many opportunities to do B-billets, which we talk a lot about on the podcast, just because, yeah, you get a job to do this for a little bit and then you get a job to do that. And you have all these opportunities, which is something that was so attractive to me wanting to apply to the military, was that every day can be different and there's endless opportunities.
Yep. That is one of the things that really drew me to it. It really did. Yep. I agree.
But you don't realize that for certain jobs, you will be doing the unfun things and mowing the yards. And I just didn't realize that.
And there are always unfun things about every job, and that's why I have told my kids like all their lives, you know, I don't care what job you go into as long as it's legal and you do it to the best of your ability. And it's a blessing when you can find something that speaks to you and you enjoy, because you put so much into work. I mean, yeah. It consumes a lot. You have to be there a lot. And when you have something that you really love or care about or feels worthwhile to you, that makes all the unfun things like the 3-hour meeting or the mission that is insanely boring for 12 hours. I mean, yeah. It makes all that tolerable because there's always those things that are not fun.
No, I totally agree. Okay, so you were in Colorado, and then where did you go next?
I went back to Tyndall, Florida, where okay. The schoolhouse was for my career field, and they had changed, you know, like all things in the military, by that time it had changed and morphed into like a year-long program. So it was very different when I went back to it, and I taught there, and I was a flight commander there, and moved up into more of the administrative stuff. But it was good because I kind of combined a couple things I liked, which was, you know, I loved teaching, and I found out that, you know, I was competent at I was good at teaching, and I got to be in my career field again, and, you know, I enjoyed that. So it combined those things for me. And it was also very stable. I don't have to travel, more of a, you know, it was demanding, but it was more of a 9-to-5, and I lived right on base. And my daughter, by that time I was divorced and had custody of my daughter, and I could, you know, I had her, she went to school on base.
That's so nice.
Yeah. She did the after school program on base. So I actually sought out that job and was lucky and fortunately got that job because I wanted it for my daughter, because it would provide an ideal situation where she could go to a good school right on base. We could live right on base. The after school program, they took the kids from the base school to the youth center. She was in a program there. You know, I could leave work for 5 minutes and take her to the chapel program once a week. So,
you know, that's awesome.
It was really ideal. And I felt very fortunate. And then that assignment is where I met my husband, and I stayed there for a while. We got married. He had to. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that have had this experience where we got married and then he left, I think, a month later for a year long remote. So
a year. Wow.
Yes. Actually, and then it got extended to like from 12 months to 13 and a half months.
No, I thought mine was not kidding. I got married and a week later he deployed, but it was only for 6 months and we had done long distance for 2 years. So we were used to it, but oh my gosh, that is insane. So how long was your like dual military when you guys were both in?
So, you know what? That's a good question, because technically when we got, I would say really only a year.
Okay. So when he got home from that deployment was when you were getting out?
I got out. So we got married. He left. I went to visit him in Korea where he was remote.
Wow.
About 3 months into his deployment. So yeah. So he went remote. I went to visit him early in his remote, like 2 or 3 months in. I went to visit him. I got pregnant while I was visiting him. Didn't know it. He missed like the whole entire pregnancy. Our friends that I was working with were like, dude, you owe us because your wife is a cranky pregnant woman.
Oh my goodness.
And we're her surrogates for her anger.
Oh my gosh. That is so funny.
I got pregnant. He came home he was able to come home for like his his mid remote leave.
Okay.
And then he had to go back. So he was there, I think, shortly after we figured out I was pregnant. And then he had to go back, and he got extended. And then when he came back, he had to go to a school up in Alabama. He went to Squadron Officer School. So he was up in Alabama for 6 weeks. And that's about the time I separated.
Okay.
I separated right at the end of my pregnancy. And so he got home a week before I had the baby. So he literally—
thank heavens.
He literally missed the— and then we moved a week after I had the baby.
You moved with a newborn? Oh my gosh. Wait, so where did you move to?
To Oklahoma. So we went back to Tinker Air Force Base, Oklahoma, where we had both had to go through training. So that we moved from Florida to, to Oklahoma.
Wow. State.
I did have to get permission, like the doctor's clearance, to take a newborn on a plane.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Cause the—
I wouldn't have wanted to drive that.
Yeah. So, and that's why, and my poor husband. So that was a crazy move. That was like, everybody's going to end up having stories like this. So he gets home. We're supposed to move. I'm due. The baby's late. He and my mother are trying to start labor. They end up talking me into taking cod liver oil, which I do not recommend to anyone. Never do that. I went into labor, but my body, because I was a week late, so I did go into labor, but my body was like, you're not supposed to be delivering yet. So I was in labor for 2 days before I went back to the hospital. I went to the hospital. They sent me home because like nothing was happening.
Marty, you're a saint. Oh my gosh.
And that was after they told me I was an idiot for taking cod liver oil. And then I went back to my house as in labor for 2 days. My water finally broke. So I had to go back to the hospital. And they ended up actually having to do a C-section. Like I was in labor all day. And they ended up having to do a C-section. So I had a C-section. And then like a few days later, got back home. And then like a week and a half later, because like the movers are all scheduled.
Yeah. So
like a week later, the movers are there to take everything away.
Oh my gosh.
My husband took one of our cars in the U-Haul and like tried to beat and managed to beat the movers to Oklahoma. And then he flew back so he could take the other car, but he like flew back. So he beat the movers there and we were able to move door to door because he already had a place to live, which is worth like all the pain it took, because having to put your stuff in storage
and then have to move it again is awful.
Yeah. So door to door is fantastic when you can get it. So he beats the movers to Oklahoma. They unload everything. He immediately catches a plane to come back to Florida. He comes back to Florida, puts me— we like have to pass— it's a base house, so we have to pass inspection.
Yeah.
Get out of it. That was crazy. We managed to get inspected and out of the house. He puts me, the oldest, and the newborn on a plane to Oklahoma. We fly. A friend of ours put us on the plane because he drove back in order to
go
there. He drove in one day back up to Oklahoma in order to beat us there so he could pick us up at the airport. And wow. That was be.
That is crazy. Okay, so you guys lived in Oklahoma, and then where did you guys go after that? Because he's been in what he went in, he was in 26 years, right?
Yeah, well, a little over, not quite 26, a little over 25. So we went from Oklahoma. We were there for 4 years. We were in Oklahoma City. We lived up in Edmond, but the Oklahoma City area, Tinker Air Force Base, for 4 years. And then we got transferred to Las Vegas.
Okay.
He was there 3 years. And then the last year he was in DC going to school, and the kids and I stayed in Las Vegas. So I was there 4 years, and then we went from Las Vegas to Virginia. We were there for 2 years.
Was that close to where you were raised?
It was. That was the first time I had been close to my family. We were in Northern Virginia. He was at the Pentagon.
Oh, wow. That is so cool.
So my parents were about, depending on traffic, of course, traffic is horrible there, but, you know, 3 hours basically from my parents.
Oh, I bet you they loved that.
Yeah, that was great. So we were there 2 years, and it was nice being close to home. And then we went to Idaho. So we went Las Vegas, Virginia, Idaho. We were in Idaho, mountain home, the middle of nowhere.
Idaho. I was saying Idaho.
Mountain home, Idaho, for 3 years. And then every place has its pros and cons. And granted, some places are better than others, like getting stationed. I mean, y'all are Marines, so you know, you get stationed, let's say, you know, in San Diego on the beach. Yeah, that's a nice area as opposed to the high desert plateau of the middle of nowhere, Idaho, but there are great things about, like, we got to go, my husband's from Montana, and he has relatives in, you know, the Seattle area, that western half of Montana. He had family in Boise, Idaho area, so we were able to see his family. And they're just beautiful areas out there. So it's
For sure. There's a lot of beautiful areas.
It's all in what you make of it. So
how far were you from like Coeur d'Alene and those kind of areas?
Actually, Coeur d'Alene, because we were in the southwest part of the state. Coeur d'Alene we never went up to Coeur d'Alene because it would have been a long trip to try to get up to Coeur d'Alene.
Oh, I bet.
But we would go up into the mountains. My favorite spot in Idaho that I used to always call my happy place was McCall, Idaho, because it was gorgeous. It was up in the mountains, and there was a huge lake up there, and it was fun any time of year. So and we went to Yellowstone multiple times.
Oh, that's so neat.
Yeah. So it was good. We got out to Seattle to see his sister and her family. So it was a really good,
it's a nice location of like all the places that are close to it.
Now, yes. And we lived on base there too. And so yeah, I mean, and we had told the kids, the younger two had never, so obviously the oldest lived on base in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And we told the younger two when we were moving to Idaho, we were like, we're going to live on base. It's going to be different, but there's some great things about living on base. You're going to have a lot more freedom because living on base, you are, no kidding, a gated community. Like that is
a gated community
with armed guards at the gate. So,
which is so funny that you say that today, because literally I went to the store today and I had a, I don't want to say like a scary situation, but as I was like pulling in, I saw this guy like walking out of the store, and it was just Dollar Tree. It's like 2 miles from my house. Like, it's not far or anything. And so I saw this guy walking out of the store, and I pulled up, got out of my car, walked in. And so I'm in there and I'm grabbing a bunch of stuff for a gift and this trip I have upcoming and yada, yada, yada. And all of a sudden that same guy walks in and like walks down past the aisle by me. And like, most definitely probably does not have a home, if you catch my drift.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, well, like, this is the exact same guy that just walked out of the store. And so I'm like walking all over, because I'm like, wait, I forgot that on that aisle. I'm like, I'm just kind of like back and forth all over. And I was trying to put this goodie bag together for my friend. And just of like random stuff, because she's getting married. And I was like, oh, I love these scrub brushes. And like, oh, this is super nice. And then she's going on a road trip for her honeymoon. So I was like, oh, I'll grab snacks. And like, it was just super easy. And so I'm walking all over the store, and every aisle I see him. And I'm like, this is so creepy.
It is.
And so I'm like kind of like freaking out, just because I thought it was very strange that I kept seeing him, because my pattern in the store was very erratic, because I was on one aisle to the next. And I was like, this feels weird that I'm constantly seeing this man and making eye contact with him, you know? And so I kind of just felt weird, because then he checks out and he hangs out on the front of the store. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to call somebody on the phone, and I'll just talk to somebody on the phone. And so I called my mom. She didn't answer. I called my dad. He didn't answer. And I was going to call Cade, but I was like, he's at work. He's doing a fire mission today. Like, I don't want to bug him. So I call my little sister, and thankfully she answers. And she's with my parents. And I'm like, can no one answer their phones around here? And so I'm just like, talk to me. Just talk to me like I'm in the store. I'm like, I'm on the phone with him the whole time, like checking out all this kind of stuff. And so finally, like, get in my car, and he's outside by my car, not like super, super close to my car, but he's like pacing the parking lot. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is so creepy. And so my mom's like, I'm so sorry I didn't answer my phone. And I was like, it's okay. I just like wanted to stay on the phone. So I'm talking to them, and then I get back on base, and my mom's like, oh, you're gone, right? And I was like, yeah. And then she's like, are you sure you're okay being at home? And I was like, well, mom, I'm back on base. Like, if something's creepy, I'll just tell 10 Marines and they'll jump on him, you know? But it's truly true. Like, you don't realize how safe you are living on base. And then Kate finds out, and he's like, why did you call me? And I was like, I thought you were CPXing. Like, I thought you were going to be busy. He's like, no, you always call me if something like that happens. I will answer my phone for you. And I was like, okay, I'm sorry, but I just don't want to get you in trouble. But like, it was creepy. And everyone talks about Oceanside being creepy. Sorry, my husband just came home and is deciding to unpack his lunchbox while I'm recording. Babe, it's loud.
I actually cannot hear it.
All of a sudden he like scares me, because I see this person walk into my kitchen, and I was like, oh my gosh. And then he's like turning on the faucet. There he is. Okay, we'll just cut that part out.
He walks in while you're talking about a creepy man stalking you.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Okay, so we'll figure out where I'm at that part, but I'll say, okay, I think when
I will say I think it's important that you paid attention and you knew something was off, because I think too many women, especially when you're young, because you know, you want to be polite, you want to be civil, you want to believe the best of people, you don't want to overreact or overblow it or you know, be silly or whatever else you're worried about being, when we should just be worried about being safe. And so it's good that you paid attention to what was going on and listen to yourself, because I actually had that happen to me decades ago. You know, I had run to the store when we were in Oklahoma, and I had a guy follow me throughout the store. And so I went and told one of the store employees, and they walked me out to my car.
That's so good. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel bad, like, saying like, oh, well, he was homeless, but like he was. And like, my thing is like, it was just scary. And I thought like you said, my mom has like ingrained in my brain to like, be aware, be aware, be aware. And that was my thing is like, I don't jump to conclusions super like quickly, but I was like, I'm walking erratically through the store, like switching aisles because I was like, oh, I forgot this. I forgot that. I need to get this. I need to get that. And then to constantly see him. And I was like, you've been in the store twice now already. Like, this doesn't make sense, you know? And so that's like why I was like so freaked out. So then I'm on base and I'm in the commissary and it has no service. And Kate's like freaking out calling me. And he's like, why didn't you call me? Like all this kind of stuff. And I'm like trying to like find a spot in the store where like I can get service and like answer him. And so everyone's like, I'm like stopping mid aisle. Like, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
You know what? But the other thing you can do if you're in that situation, and I've told my kids, especially my daughters who say I've made them totally paranoid. I'm like, good, I've done my job. So I've told them, don't be afraid to like make stuff up. Don't answer intrusive questions from people.
100% Ubers. I tell people I know the city. I'm like, yeah, you're dropping off at my cousin's house. Well, you got a suitcase. Yeah, because I'm staying the night there. Like, yeah, no. I always like, oh, I come up with these erratic stories. And then yeah. I'm like, so I just want you to know that like I was a stripper in my past life and now I'm visiting this state and I have 12 siblings because I have 4 dads. And that's what the Uber person knows about me.
Or, you know, if you couldn't have gotten anybody on the phone, you just start pretending you're talking to your husband, the 250-pound, 6'7" police officer.
That makes me think of something. So when Bama and Papa were moving from their Ohio house to the house that they live in now, it was around the same time that I was moving into my apartment in Ohio. And they pretty much got rid of all of their furniture because they bought all new furniture for their Holly Springs house. And so they left a lot of furniture for me. And so one day they're like, hey, go over and grab all of the drawers of the dresser. We'll move the dresser because it's obviously too heavy. But if you can just take all the drawers, put them in your car and take them to your apartment. So I was like, okay, Saturday afternoon, middle of July, Westerville, Ohio. Very, very, very safe town. All this kind of stuff. So I show up, I back my car into their garage, open up my trunk, go in the house, and I grab 2 drawers. I put them in my trunk, and all of a sudden I see this car. And like exactly the feeling I had in the store, the like hair on the back of my neck sticks out. And I'm like, why is that car sitting there? And for some reason, I just sat there and looked at it. And they had a for sale sign in their yard. And so I was like, okay, maybe it's it. But it said like pending or closed or something like that. I was like, well, maybe someone's still just trying to get the information. And so I just stand there and watch them. And so they do this loop. They keep driving back. They do like in the cul-de-sac. And they come and they sit in front of the house. And I was like, I feel like that's just so strange to sit in front of the house. And so I just sit there and stand there. And I kind of was just watching them. Then, Marty, just wait. They pull up, block the driveway, and like pause there, then keep driving, do a U-ey in the middle of the street, and then park diagonal from the house and sit there.
That's so creepy.
I like have my mom on the phone, and I'm like, hi, mom, I'm here. And she's like, what's going on? I'm like, I don't know, just talk to me. They do that 4 times, and they come back again, and they park in front of the street, and they do it again. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is going on? Like, this is strange. So then my mom's trying to call the police. And like, I'm deathly afraid of them being like, you put a false call on, you know, like my fear is that like, you know, like I was always taught, like you only call the police in emergency. So my mom's on the phone with them and with me. And so they're like, we're sending someone over. And then the car pulled in, blocks the driveway and tries to start talking to me.
Oh, that's so creepy.
And so they're speaking a language that I don't know. And so I just keep saying, like, I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying. And then they're like, come here, come to the car, come here. And I'm like, I can't, I'm sorry. And so I'm like trying to talk to my mom while she's talking to the lady. So then the operator is like, get off the phone with your daughter, let us call her. And they basically told me that if something were to happen to me, it would have been better for them to be on the phone with me because they record every call and they kind of played certain things back.
Yeah. Yes.
So finally, I think they realize the police are coming because I'm on the phone telling details of the car to this lady. So they literally like storm off, like drive forward. And so I'm like kind of happy they leave, kind of mad because I'm like, I wish the police would have like seen them. But my fear was that since they drove off, that the police would think I was lying.
No, yeah.
So the police finally show up and they basically were like, next time try and get more details. And I'm like, I was too afraid to get closer to the car. Like, you want me to like get snatched? I have no idea where these people are coming from. And they had tinted windows. I don't know how many people are in the car, like all this kind of stuff. And so the police show up and they're asking all these questions. And I'm like just crying. Cause I'm like, I almost just got snatched in the middle of Westerville. Like, what is happening? But it was creepy. And it truly taught me like how alert I need to be. And it's not that like everybody has bad intentions, but you don't know who has bad intentions.
You don't. You don't. And clearly that was very suspicious behavior, like the guy following you around the store. You have to assume, I mean, you don't want to think bad things about somebody, but you have to assume that is a potentially dangerous situation when someone is clearly following you, lingering by your car, or when the creepy people in the tinted windows are like clearly hanging around, observing you, and you can't go near that car. You're right. They're like, you should have gotten more details. No, no.
And sorry, that was like a tangent, but that's the thing about base. We feel so safe, and I love that. And I think we sometimes take it for granted, like how safe we really are. And it's something that I'm like, I don't realize like how wonderful it is to live on base and have those extra levels of security. I was in Oceanside like right when I came to California, and I had a car following home from the store. And do you know how nice it was to pull up to that gate and then have to turn around? I was like, yeah, you're not getting through them, buddy. The MPs will get you.
It is so awesome. It is. You're like, bye-bye.
Yeah. And I, because if worst case scenario, he got behind me because he somehow had base access, I got to talk to a military police before I can walk in. I got to show my ID and I got to say, that car has been following me. I don't know who that's in that car, but they've been following me for a very long time.
Yep. Yep.
It's nice to live and feel so safe and secure.
Yep. My kids loved living on base because, like the first year we lived there, my youngest was, oh my goodness. So he would have been in second grade. And it's time to trick or treat. And he's standing there with his friends, this little pack of boys. And we're like, yeah, y'all can go trick or treat. And he just looked at me like, wait, what? We can go by ourselves? Like, yep. Go to this area and they just had the best time. So yeah, they loved living on base and having it. And it was in Mountain Home, you know, every base is going to be different in the dynamics, but it's usually a very tight community. And especially Mountain Home Air Force Base was actually 15, 20 minutes away from town. And the town was really tiny. So you have a small Air Force base in the middle of nowhere, 20 minutes from the smallest town, the closest town is this tiny little town, which is an hour away from like the nearest city. Uh-huh. So it was a very close community. It was
that's a really awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So in Idaho, where did you guys go after?
We went to Belgium.
So I'm from Idaho. Cool. What was it like moving across the country?
Overseas moves. So moves are hard in and of themselves and can be really crazy. Moving overseas is like a whole nother level because you have to send like your hold baggage that is supposed to get there sooner. So items that you may need sooner. So you kind of have to sort like, what do I have to keep with me the whole entire time? Like what has to travel with me? What can I send in hold baggage, which is a small shipment that's theoretically supposed to get there sooner, that will have things you need right away. And then the rest of your stuff, which hopefully will get there sometime the first year you're there. And so it's just, and then, you know, you're usually trying to figure everything out, different country, different customs, different requirements, different language, depending on where you're going. Most people don't necessarily know the language in the country that they're moving to.
And what language is spoken in Belgium? I don't think I know.
There's actually three. The part that we were living in was French. They spoke French. The upper part is Flemish. And then there's some areas that speak German. And even though I took French in high school, yeah, that had been a while ago. And so while I could read certain things, and I had tried to brush up on my French, as soon as somebody started talking, yeah, I was totally lost. I'm like, slow down.
Yeah, oh yeah, they speak so fast.
Yes. And in French, like, they link the words. So conversational French is like very fast, and it doesn't necessarily sound like when you're reading. So yes, it was very challenging. I learned a lot about myself on that assignment. And one of the things was, I don't like not knowing what people are saying.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So you lived in Belgium, which is so freaking cool. And then where did you go after that?
We went to Alabama for a year. Shane went to school. So we were in Belgium for 2 years, Alabama for not even a year. And then we moved here, and he was assigned to the Fort Bragg Pope Air Base complex. And he was there for 2 years. And then the kids and I stayed here, and he went to Vegas for 2 years.
That's right. I think I remember Bama telling me about that.
Yeah. So he was in Vegas for 2 years. And then he retired from there.
So how often was he able to come home when he was doing the 2 years in Vegas?
Well, that's a good point. So in theory, he was going to be gone a lot during that assignment. That assignment requires a lot of traveling. Mm-hmm. So that was one of several reasons the kids and I stayed here. Yeah. But then COVID happened, and he wasn't able to travel, and that included coming home. So there were longer stretches that he did not get to come home.
Yeah. So
that was really hard, because he was out there, you know, and it was really, at least I had the kids. He was out there by himself, locked down, and he was renting a crappy little apartment because, you know, we're running two households. So he
has you're trying to split BAH and everything like that.
So he had a minimum amount of stuff in a crappy little apartment, and he didn't even have cable or internet. He didn't, you know, and so he was, that was hard.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that is hard. So what was the deciding factor of having him retire after 25 years?
Well, I think for him, it was a lot of reasons. It was a lot of different things. You know, we had had demanding assignments. We had been apart a lot. And I think, you know, having both perspectives, having had like been active duty and had a child, and I had had to deploy a couple times after I'd had my daughter. It is hard being the one at home when your partner deploys, but it's also really hard being the one that leaves. And
which is something I think that I'm interested to see if I get in, like how that changes, because it is different when you are the service member, but it's also when you're the wife, and you've been able to experience both. So you really know what it's like on both sides of the coin, which I think is so like valuable.
It is. And it did. I think it did help because I see a lot of spouses and partners that don't have a military background, and their introduction to the military is when they marry into it. And it is very challenging. And I think it's harder if you have not been in the military to be tolerant of or understand that when orders change at the last minute, mm-hmm. or like, you know, you're supposed to go to this job and you don't go to this job, you're supposed to deploy then, you're not going to deploy then. You know, all the stuff that as the outsider, you think is just ridiculous. And don't get me wrong, sometimes it is actually ridiculous. And sometimes it's just the way it is because, you know, the military, I used to say, the military likes to keep its options open. And really, that is the truth. You may like the situation may change, or there may be a better way of doing it, or they don't want to do that anymore. They don't want to do X, you got to do Y. I used to say when we were mission planning, you have to start with a plan. Like you have to have a plan, and then you have to be flexible because that plan will change 20 times. Yeah. So you have to know your job well enough and the situation well enough to be able to flex. And so like, I think being in the military made me like I'm going to plan for every contingency kind of person. Mm-hmm. Like when we would get ready to move somewhere, oh my word, I would look up every bit of information that I could. I would like, you know, because we had kids, I'd look, okay, what school do I want them to be in? What can we afford? Where can we afford to live in those schools? Like you get different schools that you know, are interested in. Sometimes you have no choice. Like when we moved overseas, we didn't really have a choice as to where the kids would go to school, you know, or when we moved to Idaho, there was very limited choice. So sometimes the choice is limited, but you know, I would just look up, I would be as prepared as I could because it gives you a little more sense of control. Because there's like, I tell my kids all the time, you have no control over anything in your life other than your own behavior, like how you do things. And that's hard enough. Like to me, that's hard enough to do, is like control my own behavior and be the best, you know, that I can be. And so, you know, it gives you a little more sense of, I don't know, security is not the right word, but you know, like I've said a million times, it's a very demanding lifestyle and moving is stressful and you're moving all the time and you have to find like new everything, new doctors, new, and the military member, whoever the military member is, they have a distinct advantage when you move. Mm-hmm. Like moving is way harder on the non-active duty spouse and family because the active duty member has a job they're going to. So even though, you know, I know from experience, you're nervous going to the new job, you know, you got to prove yourself all over again. So there's all that stress.
But at least you have something to focus on. You have something to put your energy into. The spouse doesn't. They're the ones worrying about the school and the kid and the house. And yeah, all of that.
That is exactly right. Because whether you have kids or not, when you're the active duty member and you go to a new base, boom, you have a group. You have a reason. You have a purpose. You have a group. You have a job. You know, you're all set. If nothing else, you have that. You could be like, no one else in the universe But you have that as the partner, you go someplace new and, you know, talk about, there's a lot of talk within, you know, the military community about kids and how to transition kids and everything. That's important. But whatever I have seen and experienced is, as an adult, it sucks having to make new friends everywhere you go. Like, I had one friend when they got transferred from Virginia, and I had known her before. We had been stationed together before, and they had to move, and then again in Virginia. And she found out they were moving. She's like, I don't want to move. I have enough friends. I don't want to meet anybody else. It's exhausting.
It's like hard to like I feel like where I'm at right now is like, I know we only have one more year in California. And so I'm like, do I even want to meet new people? Because it's only gonna be a year. Like, you have this whole thing, then you get to a certain time frame when you're like, I know I'm gonna get orders, I know I'm gonna move. So why am I putting effort in? And it's but then like, I'm lonely. I need to make more friends. I need to meet new people. No, I totally get it. It's like such a hard double-edged sword. But I think the fact that you know the both sides of it, like, I'm just so grateful that you were able to come on and talk about that, because I think that's something that a lot of spouses struggle with, and it's hard, is we don't see that side. You know, we have those struggles. And I think sometimes even the service members don't realize that we're dealing with those struggles when we're forced to move all these different places.
They don't, unless, you know, it would be the exception, I think, for someone. So I have a great example, how to do it well and how it often happens. So you have two young men in this particular case, move to the unit we were in Idaho. Mm-hmm. And they are brand new, like 18, 19 years old. They're young. They have married their high school sweethearts. Neither of these young women had been out of the towns they grew up in. And they go from where they had been at with very close community to the middle of nowhere, Idaho. And one of the couples take a place on base. Like, they sign up for base housing. They're going to live on base. They're living on base. He takes his wife to work and shows her where he's working and introduces her to, like, all the people he's, and so she meets them and they talk about, hey, you know, I have a spouse, or, you know, or we're going to go do this. Or so she has a bubble now. She has
resources. She has connections. She knows faces. You know, when you see someone in this grocery store, even if you're not close to them, a familiar face feels really good when you're coming from a town that you know every face in the grocery store. Yeah,
and they only have one car because they're a young couple. They have one car. She can walk to stuff if she needs to.
Oh, I know. I literally love walking everywhere to base because it's so easy. You can.
She can. So the other couple takes an apartment in town for whatever reason. It's not important. So they take an apartment in town and they only have one car. And that town is literally 15, 20 minutes away.
And she's isolated inside an apartment 12 hours a day.
Doesn't know anybody. There was literally almost nothing to do in that town. And, he never took her like into work, and she really struggled. She really, both super nice young ladies. I really liked both of them. And that is where something like a spouses group can make a real difference.
Oh, yeah.
And there's all different kinds of programs because, you know, we made sure that, you know, the people, the other, in this case, we had a few male spouses, but it was primarily women, were like, checking on her and connecting with her. And she ended up getting a job at a place nearby that, and it was like a Dollar Tree that it was, she could walk to it, but it got her out of the house and she made it, but that was so hard on her. It was so hard on her. And I just, you know, I hated seeing it. It was, and I was so glad that she made it, you know, she was able to, it just didn't over, she didn't like pack her bags while her husband was at work one day and leave him a note. I'm back. I'm gone.
No, it is hard. And then imagine like if he had to deploy, you know, and like there, I mean, it's really hard. And that's what I'm saying. Like they, and I think that's like one of the things I love about the podcast as well, is like you're able to understand like one, that you're not alone. So if you are in this position right now, that there are ways to like make your situation better. Cause I remember even sometimes like I live on a base, and sometimes if I don't leave the house, Cade comes home and I'm like, I've started a wall and I haven't had any human contact in 12 hours. Please talk to me. And he's like, okay, well, all I've done is talk to people, so I don't want to talk. And I'm like, you don't talk to me? Let's not talk to me. I've only talked to myself for 12 hours. You know, and like, it's hard. And you have to balance that on top of all the other things that you're balancing. And that's something that I've learned a lot about the podcast, is that you're not alone. Like there are so many people that go through those same things, and there's ways to make it better, and there's ways to make it work. Like it is possible to live this lifestyle.
And I think it was hard too, because we had a lot of very young spouses, because we had a lot of very young airmen. Like the majority of the squadron was, you know, there's about 400 people, and a vast majority of them are 18 to 22. And they have very, you know, the ones that are married have very young spouses. And so, you know, they come in and they don't want to join a spouses group. That's boring. And there's a bunch of old women, and most of them have, and when I say old, I'm thinking like anything over 30, and they have kids, and I, why would I want to hang out with them? And it's not, you know, my goal was, and I went from like never, ever being a part of a spouses group to being in charge of a spouses group. And I was like, this is not going to go well. And and I am not like, I would not ever consider myself a fun leader of the party kind of person. Like that is not me. So my goal was to just make sure everybody had a lifeline, and like, And I think I think like from my experience, certainly the Air Force got better at that. And I know the Navy already had, like when I was coming up, both as active duty and then as a spouse, I knew the Navy had different programs and, you know,
it's called like Fleet and Family, I think.
Yeah. And they really had to, I think the Navy, I could be speaking out of turn, but I really think the Navy did, and by extension, like the Marines did, already was ahead of the other branches, because, you know, from the beginning of the Navy, they put people on ships and send them away for at a minimum 6 months, you know, they were gone forever. And if they hadn't had some programs in place, they would have never had an intact family.
That's so true.
So I think, I just think however you're comfortable with it, you have to have some kind of lifeline, of support group, you know, whether that's your neighbors that live beside you, or you have a job and it's, you know, neighbors and the people at work, or it's like, you know, a spouses group or whatever. I think it's important to have a lot of different ways to get support, and then make sure that they know about it. And I will tell you that I used to get on the young, and in this case, pretty much all the young males about like not making sure their spouse had, you know, I was not one to mince words. Like,
what's I love wrong? That. All right, so to close, you've given us so much wisdom and information and knowledge, but if you just had one advice for military spouses, what would you like to impart on us unseasoned military spouses from a very seasoned military spouse?
I do. I was like, that's impossible. That's impossible. But you know what? I actually can sum it up because I used to tell this to friends of mine. And later, like when I was trying to help other spouses as the chair of the spouses group, it doesn't have to be pretty. Like it doesn't have to be pretty. Mm-hmm. You just have to get done what you need to get done. You have to do what you need to do for yourself and your partner or your family or, you know, but it doesn't have to be pretty. Like no one has to know that, you know, you haven't taken a shower for a week, you know, no one is doing it perfectly.
Yeah.
No one is doing it perfectly. And, you know, and people say that all the time, especially since social media has boomed
mm-hmm.
and everybody's on social media and everybody's life looks great. But especially in the military, like it honestly doesn't have to be pretty. And it's okay too. Like you were talking about, you just wanted your husband to talk to you and he didn't want to talk. And that's a big thing. Like that's a big disconnect. And it's okay to say, I need you to talk to me. Like when I quit active duty and I was staying at home, that first year transition, I thought I was going to lose my mind. Like I seriously thought, and I told my husband, I go, you need to call me every day. Cause it did not occur to him to call me. I'm like, you need to call me. And he's like, what's wrong? I was like, I don't, like you were saying, I don't talk to adults anymore. Like there is no talking to adults. I'm losing my mind. And there's no one in the corner on a loudspeaker going, oh, the way you made that bed, genius. The fact that you got all the kids where everyone has clean clothes. No one died today. You know, you fed everyone. No one's telling me how great I am. And I had just left a career field and a profession where I knew right away if I was doing a good job or not.
Yeah. I feel like they talk a lot about that. Like when you stay home with the kids, what is it called? They just say it's like a job where you don't get paid and you don't get told thanks. Like it's a constant job of doing all these things and no one being able to tell you did a good job because it's either children or no one's there to view it.
Yeah. And if you have kids, I mean, my statement on parenthood, I'm like, it's so unfair. Like in parenting, you have a job where like you could die and not know if you were at all successful at your job. Even if you live to an old age, how do you know if you did a good job? I'm used to knowing whether, you know, I used to think I was reasonably intelligent and somewhat competent. And then I became a parent and I found out I didn't know anything. Didn't get anything done right. So yeah, I mean, I think, and it's common for humans, I guess, we have such high expectations for ourselves, and the military attracts a lot of very type A, or however you want to put it, people that are highly motivated to do well and to succeed and excel. And, you know, it's easy to, and there's a lot of pressure, you know, it's a closed community and it can be extremely supportive, but there can be like a lot of pressure to feel like you have to be a certain way or do it a certain way. And there are so many different kinds of people in the military, and especially the spouses because they're from all over. I mean, you could have an 18-year-old that just graduated high school and hadn't been out of her town. Or I knew another woman I lived next door to that was a professor of political science.
That's awesome.
And so
yeah, there is a huge vast, and that's I think that's cool, but it does make it hard in certain situations because it is so vast.
It is so vast and it's so varied. And I think it's hard when you're a spouse because there are often assumptions made about a spouse that, you know, you maybe that it was very hard for me. And I would get really mad when I went from active duty to being a spouse, when I contacted base agencies or I had to interact with, like, I don't know, the moving office or whatever, they can be very condescending to spouses.
You're like, you wouldn't talk like this to my husband and you wouldn't have talked to me like this if I was actually still in. So let's watch ourselves.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's a big mistake in life in general to make assumptions about somebody else's intelligence or education level or ability to do something or whatever, you know, based on the fact, what, they're a military spouse, you don't know anything about them. So there's such a wealth of people and talent and personalities out there that, and interest, like there are so many people, like you may have a rodeo champion living next door to you and you don't know that. And it's, there's so much. And I think that it's easy to forget that because the focus is so intensely on the active duty member and the service, you know, it's on the Army and the mission it's on the Marine and what they're doing or what the unit's doing or, you know, the intensity of focus, and the demands are so much there that it's even though there's like a military spouse appreciation and, you know, all these different. And I think that's important, but the day-to-day living and existing and feeling good about yourself is hard. And so having a military spouse appreciation day, that's great. But the everyday appreciation is what is usually feels like it's lacking, you know?
Well, thank you so much. This was literally awesome. I'm so grateful. I've learned so much and I know all the listeners will too. Marty, you're great. You're literally amazing. And you guys had such a cool story and all the different places that you guys have lived and what you've experienced. And I love that we have people like this on the podcast because I know that there's so many people that needed to hear what you had to say and needed to know that it doesn't have to be pretty. You just got to get it done.
That's my motto. Doesn't have to be pretty. It does not have to. That's going to be on my gravestone. Doesn't have to be pretty.
I love that. Well, thank you so much again. I really do appreciate it.
Well, it was a pleasure talking to you. It was a lot of fun.
All right, y'all. Was that episode not awesome? Another huge thank you to Marty for taking the time out of her day to come on and for all the insights she gave us. And obviously, you can tell we had so much fun. We just laughed the whole time. It was so heartwarming, and she truly is the best. I wanted to close with a quote really quickly, and it's by G.K. Chesterton, and it says, "The true soldier fights not because he hates what is in front of him, but because he loves what is behind him." And I just wanted to give another shout out to all the men and women that serve our country and that put their lives on the line. I am truly forever in debt to them, and I'm so grateful that we live in this country and that we have the freedoms and abilities that we have to do these things in this country. I'm really excited that I have the opportunity to do this podcast, and I'm really excited after having all these conversations about what's coming up for season 2. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And next week's is with Bianca, who was on a little bit earlier in the year. And we talk all about infertility and miscarriages and rainbow babies and kind of what to do if you're experiencing problems conceiving. And it was really informational. I learned a ton. So check that out. And then season two will air on October 8th. Thank you again for tuning in. And I hope Marty was so informational for you and you gained something, and I will catch you next Friday.